One year ago today, the city of San Bernardino, California, experienced a tragedy. During an end-of-the-year party at the Inland Regional Center, Syed Rizwan Farouk and Tashfeen Malik opened fire, killing 14 people and wounding 22 others. The FBI concluded that they were homegrown violent extremists inspired by foreign terror groups. In June, we traveled to San Bernardino and met Julie Paez. She was shot twice during the attack. She's a mother of three and was one of the people who helped organize the party.
So you were in that room?
We were in the room. I was on the setup committee, so I was there a little early. We had a kind of a little schedule where we would take breaks. And during the breaks, we had each of the kind of groups of people would take pictures together for kind of an annual, just a group shot with the people you work directly with.
Hmm. So just kind of a normal day.
It's pretty much a normal day, yeah. Everything was fine as far as I knew. I didn't, you know, there were reports that Syed had gotten arguments with people. There was nothing that I noticed out of the ordinary that day.
But you knew him?
I knew him, yeah. I never worked directly with him. Hmm. I wouldn't consider him a friend, although he was friendly.
Farouk had attended the party in the morning, but left at about 10:30 a.m. A half an hour later, he and his wife returned with semi-automatic rifles and pistols and began to open fire.
I at first thought this was some kind of drill, but being on the planning committee, I was like, we didn't plan for any kind of, drill. So it was kind of like sinking, but that was my first, moments. When things were actually flying around, that I realized this isn't, you know, fake gun sounds. This is real. But I was down by then. I never got up. I was shot when I was down.
And what did you do when you realized it was real?
When I realized it was real, I tried the best I could to just, get as prone on the ground as possible, kind of make myself as, you know, against the ground. And I honestly did sort of, I don't want to say play dead, but almost like you just don't move.
Did you recognize him when he walked in?
When he walked in shooting? Mm-hmm. No.
Did you realize that you had been shot? Because I often hear people that get shot and they don't even realize it, but you knew.
No, I knew I was shot because I was shot right in the right through the pubic bone. I felt blood and urine spill out, so I knew exactly where I was shot. So, no, I felt myself shot both times. The second time, basically the same area. Part of me was thinking, well, at least it didn't damage a whole other area of my body.
Outside the room, there was chaos. The building was evacuated, and first responders were on their way. Local TV journalist Alex Vasquez of KNBC was the first reporter on the scene.
Well, that specific day, I was on my way to my office, and I heard on the police scanner a call of a reported shooting. And I was only maybe, 3 blocks away. So I came around and I saw two officers with their lights and sirens heading towards the IRC building. I parked my news van, I grabbed my camera, and when I grabbed the camera was when I heard a loud bam. So I'm thinking the whole time, this is a drill, this isn't real. I drive up and down the street all the time. And I parked the van, I grabbed the camera, started running towards the building. Right here on the corner is when I saw people running towards me. Screaming, yelling, there's a shooter, there's a gunman. And some of the images that I remember mostly is a pickup truck actually driving away from the building with about 6 or 7 gunshot victims in the bed of the truck. Mm. And they were bleeding profusely. I mean, it was a very, very bloody scene.
And you're saying that the space where we're standing right now, right across the street, was actually a place that the authorities set up to...
This was the triage center right here. And I remember specifically walking across this little crosswalk here and seeing a woman laying there, and I was going to put the microphone in her face to interview her because I had my camera, and I went across to interview her other friend. She waved me off, said, I don't want to talk, I've been shot. By the time I turned around, that woman had taken her last breath, and she had actually passed away right there in front of me. So it was something that was an image that I'll never get out of my head. So when I can, I try to stay away from this area. Even coming today, I felt weird parking over there because it brings back those memories of that day and what I saw. It was weird because as a journalist, you know this, we have a job to do and to report. But that day, I couldn't help but put my camera down and lend people my cell phone so you can call their loved ones and tell them that they were okay. Because everybody was running and from that building to where we're standing right here.
Meanwhile, the shooters were nowhere to be found. Hundreds of officers and agents had arrived at the site of the attack, including Sergeant Gary Shulkey, a narcotics officer in the city whose son Ryan is also on the force.
And at this point, you think that it's terrorism or a workplace shooting, or you just don't know?
Really had no idea. Given the fact that it was a county employee, it was a county building, I was kind of thinking maybe workplace related. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really thinking towards the terrorist angle, but didn't really have any idea. And then a call of a suspicious vehicle came in at one of our local parks here. And during the information gathered from the reporting party on that call was a black SUV with Utah plates, and we actually got the plate number. Donnie ran up the license plate, found that it was a rental car company.
He's referring to police analyst Donnie Svonkin, who worked on the investigation.
Through her many contacts, she was able to track down who rented that vehicle, and it turns out it was, in fact, Syed Farouk. I asked her to find the rental agreement. From that rental agreement, we got some information. In the meantime, Donnie also found an address in our databases. We have special law enforcement databases that we use, and she found an address in Redlands.
And once you got there?
Immediately when they got there, the black SUV was pulling away. We were all in unmarked vehicles. We didn't have a marked unit to make this traffic stop. I put out that I didn't want any trying to traffic stop there on Tippecanoe because, you know, there's Sam's Club, there's a bunch of shopping centers there, and it was a lot of heavy traffic. And I just did not want to engage in a gun battle with this guy with all these innocent people around.
And that's what you were expecting, a gun battle?
You always expect that stuff. As an officer, you're always anticipating the worst and being prepared for it. So they make that eastbound turn onto San Bernardino Avenue from Tippecanoe. And almost immediately after making that turn, my son, who's in the passenger seat of the vehicle with me, he says, "Dad, there's shots fired, shots fired." And looked at the car, and I could see that the back window of the Expedition was completely blown out. And no offense, but the media was a big hindrance to us that day. They were monitoring our radio channels, and everything we put out over the radio, they were there for. So I hadn't put out any of this over our police radio because I didn't want a media circus to be there if something did happen. Farouk pulls to the south curb of the street, exits his vehicle, and just begins firing indiscriminately at Sergeant Capps. My son Ryan has my AR-15 rifle with him in the passenger seat. He gets out and engages Farouk right away. And then several of my other officers who were behind also get out, and the gun battle basically starts. I start laying rounds down range and firing at Farouk specifically. We move into the front yard of a house on the south side. And Farouk goes down and is basically laying on the ground. I see him bring a leg up and act like he wants to sit up again, fire some more rounds until he's no longer moving. I'm sitting there waiting, and I'm watching to see what's going on, and I can still hear bullets whizzing by me. And I look over at the SUV, and all I can see are hands coming up in the back window with a rifle. And it's Tashfeen just firing indiscriminately out the back window. So then I transition to laying rounds down range at the vehicle. We all started basically advancing through the front yards towards the vehicle, trying to get a better angle, trying to get closer. We reach a hedge, and basically it's a skirmish line, and we're firing into this vehicle waiting. Chief comes up and fires some more. We fire some more rounds. Other officers are starting to arrive now, and they're firing into the vehicle as well. And eventually, you know, the threat stops, so we stop firing, and that was pretty much it.
Today, hand-painted stars hang on the fencing outside the Inland Regional Center. They're called Stars of Hope, and they're sent all around the world from people impacted by disaster to other people impacted by disaster. Julie Paez has one displayed in her home. She also keeps a medal that she was given after the attack.
This is awesome. I'll show you what this is. So when I was in, right after surgery, the nurse, it was a guy, his name was Dexter, and I was pretty much out of it. But he was in the recovery room after the surgery. So these are the things that get me choked up, the nice people.
So he runs marathons. And every time he runs a marathon, he saves them for people he comes across. So, I'd say congratulations, Employee of the Year, because I got an award at that day for, anyway. And God bless, keep running. But anyway, it was just so nice. So that's what that's about.
That's good that you, it's the good things that get you.
It is. That's totally, it's the good things. The bad things, shoot, they've happened. I can't change them, but it's the good things.
Our conversation with Julie Paez in June. We spoke with her today. She had two major surgeries that didn't go as well as hoped back in August. She says she's in pain every day and is struggling to navigate the county's insurance system to get the physical therapy she needs. But she says she remains grateful every day for what she does have and doesn't take it for granted.